Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reddy Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
Ladies and gentlemen, at the start of the fourth round, Gordon Blair having retired, the winner, Michael Carruth.
By Kinsler, Quinn heads on. Oh, surely this time for Keane. And Ireland do it. Robbie Keane.
Sunshine, 106.8. Sunshine, 106.8.
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. We'll be kicking off the papers as normal this morning. We're talking to our very own Ken Doherty all the way from Milton Keynes. And in racing, we'll have Dave Weldon from the Racing Hour podcast to speak about the very latest news in horse racing and, of course, the Grand National. So we'll be getting his lucky 15 too. We'll be speaking to sports journalist of the Irish Independent and our left wing podcast, Will Slattery, as we look ahead to this weekend's action from the Champions Cup semi-final and the start of the 2021 Women's Six Nations, where Ireland will begin their campaign against Wales. In GAA, we'll be delighted speaking to former Meath footballer, of course, and current under-20 Meath manager, Bernard Flynn, giving his thoughts on the GAA's roadmap for the 2021 season and also talking about the Laker Gale TG Cahir programme, which he will be celebrating his remarkable career in next week. In football, we have Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call to speak about the very latest action for the midweek Champions League results and this weekend's fixtures in both League of Ireland and Premier League. And in the comeback, the COVID-19 return to sports, this week we're speaking to Swim Ireland's National Performance Director of Swimming and Diving, John Rudd, as he discusses how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the sport clubs and international teams in the country. So, as always, you can get in touch with us with here on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp 087 188 1068. And of course, don't forget we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068 and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Okay, so time to turn our attention to the papers. Delighted to be joined, as always, by our own Ken Doherty. Morning, Ken. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's beautiful. Absolutely cracking morning here. It's freezing cold, but it's beautiful outside. Blue skies. So we're in good form. Bit disappointing for you during the week.
Yeah, very disappointing, to be honest. You know, I was really sort of looking forward to this World Championship. You know, and I've done a lot of sort of preparation, a lot of practice for it. And yeah, got beat 6-4 in the end. And very disappointed, all right. You know, it's just one of those days that was really... It was really... I had the match, like, in the hand. I was 4-1 up. I was cruising. And then just the wheels came off. And, yeah, very disappointing, all right, you know?
We were heartbroken for you because it was Lee Walker and we were watching it. And, yeah, like you said, you were just 4-1 and it looked like this is it. Great, we're through to the next bit. And
yeah, no, it's just... sometimes it happens like that, doesn't it? You know, like, you get to a stage and you're almost at the winning line and, you know, and then just... he started to come back. He started to play well and then... Things sort of turn around for him and against me, and it's just the way it goes, you know. But it's, yeah, it was disappointing. Even particularly the first match, you know, you want to get over the first match, get into the tournament, you know, and then you sort of the pressure is off a little bit, you know. But yeah, disappointing for all the Irish lads. Actually, Fergal lost in his second match, and Aaron Hill from Cork lost as well in his first match, and. Yeah, so it's disappointing for all the Irish, to be honest, you know. But Jimmy White, of course, we had that big game with Jimmy White and Stephen Hendry. I don't know whether you watched any of it. There was a lot of hype about it.
They took it off the TV and put it on the app, and I didn't get a chance then to watch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it was. I mean, it wasn't, quality-wise, it wasn't fantastic, but it was still very sort of amazing to watch, like, you know what I mean, about these two greats who have played so many finals, 4 finals of the World Championship over the years in the 90s. And then doing battle right down in round one, like, you know. But it was great to see. It was hard to see a loser. You know, I felt sorry for both of them, to be honest, because it was a tough match for both. And of course, Jimmy losing it sort of puts him off the tour. But I'm sure he'll be back in anyway with a wild card. You know.
Yeah, hopefully it's important to have Jimmy involved. And to see Alan McManus as well announced his retirement.
Yeah, that was very sad last night. Alan McManus lost his first round match, which meant he falls outside the top 64. So he's off the tour now as well, but he's decided to call it a day. He doesn't want to come back And after 31 years of professional snooker, like, I battled with him most of those years, I tell you. Yeah. And he was a tough nut to crack. I mean, he was one of the toughest players I think that I've ever played. You know, a great. He won the Masters, of course, in 94. Lost in a couple of semi. I think he's been to the final, semi-finals of the World Championship three times. And he's had a very good career. You know, he's been thereabouts every sort of year, you know, at the top end of tournaments during the 90s when he was at his peak. And, yeah, he was really... They call him Angles McMahon. It's because of his knowledge of the angles and, yeah. You know, for getting out of snookers or laying snookers and stuff like that. But he's, you know, a great competitor over the years, you know.
No doubt about it. Brilliant ambassador, yeah. So, he's doing well. Doing a bit in TV work, though, anyway, isn't he?
Yeah, well, I think he's just going to concentrate on that. I mean, he works with the BBC. Yeah. He does a bit with Eurosport. And, of course, he does the bit with ITV as well. So, he's a great pundit as well. He's a great commentator. And he's great to work with. You know, he's a really good lad. And he's one of those Reds that he absolutely loves the game. You know, he's a real sort of aficionado of snooker. And he's always posing, like, difficult questions and, like, a bit of history about the game and stuff like that. He absolutely loves the game. So he'll be in the game for a long, long time. And he'll be a great asset. As I said to him on Twitter last night, he's been a great ambassador on the table, but just as much as an ambassador off the table, and he will continue to do so in his media work for sure, you know.
No doubt about it, yeah. He is a great guy. We wish him well. I know you'll be glued to the Masters. It's been disappointing for Rory again, just not getting it together at the important times, but Shane Lowry's gone okay.
Yeah, he's there. Yeah, I was watching. I was glued to Shane Lowry's group all day yesterday. I thought he played really well. I mean, he was sort of unlucky not to finish a little bit better, you know, because he played some amazing shots. But I tell you what, because of the green, it's so hard. I mean, it's made it so difficult for a lot of them, and the putts, and so fast. I mean, a lot of players, like, man, there was one player who put it onto the green, off the green, and then he was into the water. Like, you know? That's like what you and me do, Reg.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
But the greens look mad this year. Like, it almost looks like the greens are burnt or something, which is normally.
Yeah, I know. It's probably maybe just the weather, but they're very firm. And it's the way, as I said, the commentators keep saying, it's the way that the Augusta Nationals like it, you know. They love it like this because it makes it... When it was played in... when was it? October, November time when DJ won it. Yeah. It was, like, too soft, you know. So they were firing them in. I mean, DJ just absolutely destroyed the course.
Yeah.
But now they can't fire them into the pins anymore. So it makes the putting so much more difficult and it makes it landing near the flag so much difficult as well. So that's the way... That's the way the real sort of Augusta green should be like, you know what I mean? Yeah. But I thought Larry did really well, yeah.
He did.
I mean, he's on level par. He finished one over, but, you know, he's there. He could, like, a couple of birdies here or there, and he could have been, you know, right up. But I fancy he's going to have a couple of good rounds, though. You know, he looks very comfortable, to be honest, you know?
He seems very comfortable. He seems to be in great shape. You know, just nice and relaxed. He's there, I suppose, most importantly. That's the biggest thing is to be there, and you're always able to shout then. And I thought Justin Rose did very well yesterday, you know, because the wheel started.
He had a big wobble, didn't he?
Big time. And Spieth is moving back up, and people are kind of putting pressure on him and everything else. But he just kept it together and pulled himself back into that 7-under. And a lot of the commentators saying that 7-under could be the magic number.
Yeah, I think it'll be a bit higher, to be honest. You know, I think the scoring will be better today and indeed tomorrow. Although the weather, I think the weather is going to change a little bit, so that may have some sort of bearing. But I think they'll go into, like, I think about 11 or 12 under is going to win this. You know, I really do. But I think, like, it's really hotting up. I'm looking at the leaderboard. You got Rose 7 under. Zalatoris, I don't know much about him, 6-under. Leishman, who I have a tenner on at 80-1.
Oh, really?
he's on 5-under. Spieth, of course, is up there. And Finau, who I like as well. He's one player I would love to see win this. You know, that's Tony. If Justin Rose doesn't win it, of course, I'd love to see someone like Finau or, of course, our own Shane Lowry. But Finau, he's been there.
Ankle. Every time I see him, I cringe every time I see him when I think of him jumping in the air and going over on the ankle and then just popping it back in. For those who didn't see it, he dislocated his ankle on the par 3 competition a couple of years ago and jumped in the air after getting a hole in one or something and landed awkwardly. And dislocated his ankle on the course, sat down the ground and popped it back in. It was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot.
He's made of steel, I tell you what. Yeah, I mean, he's been thereabouts. He's got a lovely sort of way about him and a lovely swing. It'd be great to see him do so well. And, you know, he's been knocking on the door for so long and never sort of got the W, you know, one of these majors yet. But he's one player that I would like to see come true, you know.
And Deschambeau with all of the big swing and everything else.
Yeah, with the big muscles.
Yeah,
with the big muscles.
Right.
Yeah.
Though, you know? I mean, I don't know if Augusta, I don't know if it's made for that type of power. As you said, the accuracy is more far.
He looks like Popeye, doesn't he? He looks like Popeye when he's playing with the big muscles, bursting through his t-shirt. Certainly not like me. And anyway, with my little chicken wing legs and a chicken wing arms. But it's all power with him, you know. And he's trying to do what sort of, you know, no one has really done before, trying to hit par fours, like get on the, you know, like really sort of make the course look a lot shorter. But it's so tricky, you see, you know, and that's the great thing about Augusta. It's so, so tricky, you know. You get, and it's cut him out, like, you know. But I tell you what, he came back really well yesterday. He shot 5 under. Mm. And so he's back to 1 under. He's tied 17. So he could have another good run. I mean, I wouldn't totally discount him out just yet. He needs another couple of 5 unders, though, for sure.
Absolutely.
But I think it's really, really been fantastic, the Masters. I think the coverage is fantastic as well, you know.
Yeah, no, it's really enjoyable. You didn't have 151 shot last week, did you?
No, I didn't. I don't know who did. Only the probably the stable at that. I owned the horse, but what a wonderful story, though.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, my young lad Aidan, we did a sweep in the house, and he had him. We were slagging him, going, he's a donkey, you're not going to get anywhere. And then, of course, he's looking at him out in front the whole way around. And
No way.
His dad, the sports presenter, telling him, nah, forget it, he'll fall away. He's no good. Give him another lap. He's still there, Dad. So it was a good story, but... So he won the sweep. So he won the Euro sweep in our house. So he was delighted himself.
Yeah. I've been following. It's a fantastic story. It's great to see stories like that, you know. And I think, and indeed with Aintree this week as well, it's been some wonderful stories. You know, small stables winning big races, and that's great to see as well. It's great encouragement for the industry, you know, and for those individual trainers. We wouldn't have a lot of horses. But to come up with winners at these big races is just fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant, you know.
What's cut?
I'm just gutted. I wasn't on it. That's
I know. As is everybody. What's cut your eye in the football this week?
I'm looking forward to the big, you know, Man United against Tottenham. Of course, United winning this week against Granada. I don't know what you saw. And Arsenal, they gave away a goal very late in the game, didn't they?
I know, yeah.
Against Sparta Prague.
I was waiting for you to get stuck into me about last week. Never mind during the week.
Yeah.
I've been getting a lot of that in the ear all week off the young lads at home. But, there's no surprises anymore when we lose these games. It's kind of... Arteta, I don't know, it's just not going right for him. And I know there's plenty saying we don't have the squad, but it's just not going right, I suppose. And something needs to turn around pretty quickly.
Yeah, but I'd like to see them get through now, I must say, into the semi-final. I think an Arsenal Man United Europa League final would be quite good, you know. I hope he does. I do like Arteta, I must say. I like his philosophy on the game.
Yeah,
it's a bit like Solskjaer. I mean, he needs a little bit of time and a little bit of money and a few players and stuff like that, you know. But big grudge match on Sunday now with United and Tottenham. Of course, Mourinho, of course, who's managing Tottenham now, will be facing his old club. So there'll be a few sparks flying, I'm sure, around in that match. It's going to be played in Spurs White Hart Lane, so it'll be interesting to see. That's on Sunday at 4:30. That's going to be a good match.
Yeah, no, it's good to see it back. I mean, when they have the breaks, it's hard, so it's good to see it back. But there's an awful lot of pressure on Liverpool now as well. I mean, they're down in seventh place. They got Villa this week. It's not getting any easier for them. And for Liverpool fans, it's really starting to get... a little bit squeaky bum time, you know, because they're well down that table considering where they feel they should be.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. And Liverpool, I mean, they sort of came a little bit unstuck, didn't they, this week against Real Madrid? But they're still in it. I mean, you know, They scored an away goal.
That's a big thing. I think that's a
big
huge
thing. Yeah.
They weren't good. I mean, but I was very surprised how many people were kind of writing Real Madrid off before this game. I mean, I know they're going through difficulties, and Alan Colley has spoken to us a lot about it here on the show, as are Barcelona. But it's still Real Madrid over there. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
But getting an away goal, because I was saying it to Aidan again, that my Liverpool supporter, I was saying to him, look, you get 2-0 at home now. And all of a sudden, you're right back in the race. And
big time, yeah.
It's going to be so big. And that's definitely not beyond it.
No, not at all. And remember when they were 3-0 down to Barcelona and they came back and beat them 4-0 at home. I mean, that was one of the greatest games that I think Anfield has ever seen. So, yeah, I mean, no, definitely they're still well in it. And, you know, as good as Real are, they always give you chances, don't they? And if they get off to a good start, Liverpool at home, they have a huge mountain to climb, but if they get off to a good start, you just never know. Real Madrid are playing Barcelona this weekend as well, so there's only a point, I think, in the difference of the league table, like between the top three teams, between Atletico, Barcelona and Real. So it's going to be so... Barcelona are a point behind. Real are 3 points behind the leaders, but if they win this match, they'll go equal with Atletico. So it's a huge match in terms of the league as well. And it's always a spicy one, Barcelona and Real Madrid as well.
No, that'll be a cracker. No doubt about it.
Who's your pick for the golf?
Who's my pick for the golf? Well, I have to say, I think the way Spieth is after kind of creeping up the leaderboard there quietly, he's had a bit of a, you know, off. He knows the place well. People aren't really talking about him, but all of a sudden you look around and he's in fourth place at 5 under. I'd say he could be one that will definitely be thereabouts at the end. I don't necessarily see it being like Rose could hold on, but it's a very difficult thing to do to hold on at that stage. But you know, there's people there kind of that are always there or thereabouts. Matsuyama is another one. You know, 4 under. They're always thereabouts, but they never kind of quite get there. Like Schauffele is another one, 3 under. They're all ones that could have a good chance. But I just have a feeling Spieth might get there. Yeah. You know, for whatever.
Spieth or Justin Thomas as well. He's done very well. Of course, won the players this year as well. You know, it's going to be interesting. It's a great weekend of sport. I must say, with the national as well.
Well, the rugby is on as well. Of course,
the rugby.
Got Exeter. That's going to be a tough game, I tell you. They've got a really, really tough one with that, because Exeter are the current champions and they're good.
very good.
So that's not going to be an easy one. But did you watch any of it last weekend?
I didn't see any of it, no, because I was so wrapped up in getting ready for me out.
Munster had a tough one against Toulouse. Toulouse, like, it was a great game of rugby, really was. Toulouse were very good. Munster kept in the game the whole way, and you kind of felt they always had a chance, but it also felt like Toulouse always had that other gear, and in the end they just found it. So there wasn't much in it in the end on the scoreboard, but I think Toulouse were kind of always that little bit ahead. So they got... Yeah, a tough one, and of course Leinster got that walkover because of COVID and everything else.
That
doesn't help Leinster, because they needed a game before today.
Yeah, they probably could have done with it.
Really done with the game. Going in, some will say you're going in fresh, others will say, well, you're going in fresh, all right, but you're going in against one of the best teams in the world, and yet with no game time, so that doesn't really help either, you know.
What do you think?
Well, I can never go against Leinster. That's just the way it is. But I think it'll take absolutely everything they have to get a result. I really do.
I think Exeter
are going to be very good. Now, I'm not. I don't doubt that Leinster have that capability, but everything has to go right for them. You know, there's an interesting pair up with Scott Fardy and Devin Toner in the second row. It's a good team. There's no question about it. It's a good team that they've picked. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, but like they're up against it. That's the honest way of putting it, is they're up against it, but Leinster are well capable of getting a result.
I'm looking forward to it.
Unfortunately, it clashes with the women's game. It's terrible the way they do all these games. So the Women's Six Nations was postponed because of COVID, and then it was put back onto this time. And it's on this weekend. And the English women's game was supposed to be on BBC yesterday, but then they pull that off BBC because Prince Philip died. So they they kind of got the short end of the stick there on that yesterday on BBC. And then our women are playing today at 5 or 5:30, which clashes with the Leinster game, which is at 5:30, I think. So that's a bit of a blow for them. Like, I don't know why they can't have these matches started. There's a lot of people want to watch all of them. So it's
the funny thing,
the whole thing about women's sport not getting the coverage that it should do, you know? Which whole new debate. But
you talked about Prince Philip there. I remember when he came to Dublin and with the Queen, you know, and I took my mother to see him. And my mother was still alive at the time, so I got two invites, you know. So I took my mother because my mother loves the Queen, like, you know. So she was so delighted. She came into the room. My mother stood up in the crowd. She was clapping like a seal. Like, couldn't get her sat down. Couldn't get her sat down in the chair, you know. But she was so excited just to see her, be in the same room as her. So anyway, I had to leave because I'd only had a guest pass then to go upstairs to actually meet the Duke and the Queen, you know. My mother had to stay downstairs. So I met the Duke. The Duke came up our side, the Queen came up the other side, and it was just nice to shake hands and, you know, hello. And what do you do? I said, I'm a snooker player. I said, how'd you do in the World Championship? Oh, not that great. Oh, well, better luck next year, he says, and he moves on, like, you know.
Yeah, they do their
but game. I get a tap on the shoulder from this, like, detective, you know.
Yeah.
Like, while I'm in this room, just after the prince is gone, and he says to me, he says, Ken, he says, is Ken Doherty? He says, yes. He says, what's wrong? He says, your mother's downstairs. She says, she's gone if you don't come down to her right now.
No way. You're not serious.
I swear. I mean, this detective, he had a gun and everything. You see the gun.
And your mother has a brother.
And my mother told him to go upstairs and tell my son, if he doesn't come down, I'm leaving here now. Go home, she says.
Oh, that can only happen with Irish.
Oh, I know, yeah. Well, I tell you what, my face turned all sorts of colour. Because in front of the company, like, you know.
Yeah, it's only the Queen.
It was brilliant, though. It was absolutely brilliant.
Sorry, I have to go. Let's be better.
It's One of those things.
Yeah, well, it was a nice privilege to be in the room with her.
She was absolutely over the moon. Yeah, it was a great day for her, you know.
Yeah, but she'd seen her bit now. She'd got her bit. That was it. She wasn't hanging
out. That was it. She wanted it, yeah. And she was a bit annoyed that she couldn't come upstairs, but you weren't allowed because security protocols and stuff like that. So she had to stay downstairs. So she was really sort of... She was very impatient,
she wasn't,
you know.
Impressed, yeah. But no. He's not going to be up there.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, brilliant.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. What's planned for the week? You're a commentator?
Yeah. Yeah, it starts on Saturday, next Saturday.
Yeah.
And we have sort of Judgment Day on Tuesday and Wednesday. They're the final qualifying rounds to see the 16 qualifiers to get through. So I'm going to be doing a bit with World Snooker TV for that. And then, of course, the BBC on, from Saturday onwards, yeah.
Did they allow crowds in the end, or...?
Yeah, so we've got 30% crowds from the beginning, from the first weekend. Right. The government is back. This is sort of a pilot scheme. So they're going to use this one. We're allowed crowds in right from the beginning and right up to the final, which is going to be the full capacity allowed unless there's another sort of outbreak. But the full capacity expected, because all the crowd are going to get tested. You know, these 15-minute lateral tests.
Yeah.
So they're all going to get tested, and everybody's be wearing masks in the arena. But they'll be all tested, and they'll be all, they'll only be negative allowed, obviously, you know. And it's going to be fantastic. So we're going to have a 30% starting off, but it'll sort of grow to 40, 50, right up to 100% for the final, which is going to be absolutely fantastic.
That's amazing. Well, we're all getting this here. Of course, I'd forgotten Monday, everything opens up again there, doesn't it?
Everything opens up here on Monday, pubs and restaurants and other shops now as well, which is fantastic. They're vaccinated, like, I don't know, almost like, what is it, must be nearly 40 million, 35 million or something like that now. So, but yeah, everything is starting to open up a little bit more slowly. So things, because I'm in Sheffield, I've been here now for the last few weeks, it's been absolutely dead, like most cities have. But you can see the bit of life starting to come in. The shops and the pubs and the restaurants are getting ready for outdoor dining and outdoor drinking only, obviously, you know, at the beginning. But starting to come back.
It seems odd. We're shutting down more, and everywhere else is starting to open. Restrictions have gone up here, and countries added to quarantine lists and everything. Yeah. So it's bizarre.
And they've been slow. I just listened to the news, been slow about the vaccinations are a little bit slow coming into the country still. They've been put back another couple of weeks.
It seems to be an odd.
Well, you must be in that bracket now, are you, Reg? The 60-70 bracket?
I'm well in. Very vulnerable bracket. That's me all over.
Not as vulnerable as I was on Tuesday, I tell you.
You got it a year ago, sorry, whatever, 6 months ago, you've had it, so you're out the other side. So,
I know.
You're bulletproof. Okay. All right. Well, I better let you go. So good.
Have
chat.
A great weekend.
You too. Enjoy the golf now. And
and enjoy the golf and the Grand National and the rugby and the football as well. It's great.
Shane Lowry can come through for us and give us something excited about.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you later. Take care.
Take care. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All the best. That's Ken Doherty there giving us all of his thoughts and filling us in on the snooker as well. Unfortunately, didn't get through against Walker. Just when it looked like he was cruising, it wasn't to be. But anyway, that's disappointing. It's time to have a look at the comeback now, our COVID-19 section that we're doing each week with all of the various industry or sporting industries that are trying to make their way back after all of this COVID. I'm delighted to be joined now by Director of Performance, Dr. John Rudd. Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Beautiful morning out there, enjoying the sunshine. It's cold, but we can manage that. Everybody's out and about, getting plenty of fresh air. I'm out in Greystone, so they're in swimming from 6 a.m. with all the happy pairs. So, you know, outdoors is great, but of course, you guys are involved in predominantly indoor sports, so it's been difficult for you. How are things shaping up, and have you got any idea when you're likely to get back?
Well, We're still waiting, obviously, for government guidance as to exactly when this can occur, and we don't think that that's too far away now. I think what we are confident of is that the outdoor part of our sport will be able to return before the indoor section, and I think that's probably something that most sports would recognise. But we're also confident that, you know, the chlorinated water in indoor swimming pools is one of the safest environments that people can be in during COVID times. So we would hope that swimming's looked on really favourably when the decision makers get around the table and start to decide when various sports can get back in.
Swimming, you know, obviously people think of big European Championships, indoor events, the Olympics, that type of stuff. But there's been a massive surge, as I mentioned, where I live anyway. I'm seeing a huge amount of it in the open water type of swimming. I know you guys would be overseeing lots of elements of that as well. It's really increased with sea swimming, and it's become trendy almost. Everybody, you're nobody now if you don't have a dry rope.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think that it was already something that was incredibly popular, but it was one of those things that was going under the radar. You know, the number of people that enjoy open water swimming or sea swimming all year round, in Ireland in particular, has always been very significant. But I think that COVID's actually put a spotlight on that activity and those people. And yes, additional people will have jumped on that bandwagon and started to enjoy it. And look, it's not for me personally. I like the water to be a little bit warmer, but for those guys, they love it. And fantastic for mental health and for clearing the head and for getting ready for a stressful day.
Yeah, I'm constantly being hounded by my friends to get down, but May is my starting time. I won't get in before then. But I must admit, myself and my three sons, we spend all summer in the sea. You know, we love it. And it is very, like, it's hard to explain how well you feel after it. It's so refreshing. It's unbelievable. But with that increase, John, in terms of open water style swimming, and I know triathlons and things like that and Ironmans, they've all become hugely popular as well, and the open sea swimming is a big part of that. Is there a big increase in us developing athletes that maybe go in for these more endurance type races? And
well, potentially so. I mean, the key thing I think is that there's a difference between people open water swimming for leisure and for health, and to start their day or to finish their day on something that makes them feel good, in comparison to doing it for competitive reasons. And, you know, the endurance-type swimming events require a massive amount of commitment and a huge amount of hours in the water every week. So hey, we would hope so. Certainly as a performance director, you know, I would be delighted to see more athletes from Ireland looking to swim in those endurance type events, and for us to develop a competitive open water program that can challenge a European, world and Olympic level. That would be fantastic.
Absolutely. Well, talk to me a little bit more about the our athletes and our competitive athletes. I went to school with Gary O'Toole. I swam myself for many years with Triton he was with back in those days. I can't quite remember. In the early days, when I was young, maybe 12 or 13 years of age, brilliant form of exercise. But we have been lucky to have some very, very high quality athletes in swimming. How are they managing throughout this whole COVID thing? And have they been allowed to train on their own because they're elite athletes, or how does it work?
Well, so the majority of the COVID period, they have been able to train. There was an initial period when we went into the very first lockdown back in early 2020 when they were unable to train. I think when we were very much as a society learning about this virus and what the circumstances were. But after 5 or 6 weeks, through great work by both Sport Ireland and the OFI alongside Swim Ireland, we were able to get athletes back in the pool. And they've been backing ever since.
Okay.
And we've been training in three hubs, if you like, one in Dublin, one in Limerick, and one in Bangor. Mm-hmm. And those athletes that have been identified as, you know, our international prospects, and particularly those that have a focus on the Olympic Games, have been able to swim in those three pools. It's been difficult for those that don't naturally live within the vicinity, and they've had to make some lifestyle changes to accommodate that. But in the main, we've not had too many interruptions when it comes to training. It's been the competitive element, you know, the international racing as part of the preparation that's been the difficult piece.
And how have the rest of the world, I mean, we look at the UK opening up from next week to a very high level. I don't know if swimming is back on the agenda, but I presume it may well be very shortly in the UK. But other parts of Europe, are there any competitions going ahead? Is there anything planned in that way? Are we being left behind that way?
We've not been left behind in our ability to run competitive events in Ireland. Mm. It's just that we've only been able to do it for a very discrete number of swimmers. You know, less than 1% of those that would consider themselves to be competitive swimmers are able to train right now.
Right.
So the UK is opening its indoor swimming pools on Monday. It's a little bit in advance of where we're at, particularly because of their vaccine rollout in comparison to us, you would say. And in Europe, there are competitions that are springing up, predominantly in outdoor venues. You know, the countries that are able to put on outdoor swimming venues comfortably because of their climate, the likes of Spain and Italy and so on. But I think the thing that's now the big question mark is the rising number of countries that are going to appear on the Category 2 list when it comes to travelling in and out of Ireland.
Yeah.
And whether or not we'll actually be permitted to go to those competitions and use them as preparation. And that's a question mark at the moment that we're hoping that we can unpick, you know, alongside ministers to ensure that our preparations for the Olympic Games are not unnecessarily thwarted.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there any indication? I know these restrictions only came in yesterday, you know, so adding the likes of France and the US and various different other jurisdictions to the quarantine list, it has to have a telling effect. I mean, I'm looking at rugby and I'm thinking, how does this affect the Champions Cup? Because we've got so many French teams now involved in it. You know, it's similar, I presume, for swimming.
Yeah, I mean, it's a double-edged sword in that we have athletes that are based abroad, mm-hmm. and some are based in the US collegiate system and some are based in the UK,
yeah.
who need to travel back here for certain qualification events. And so there's question mark number one. And then we have a need to be able to race between what is our Olympic trials from the 20th of this month, so we're very close to that, between that period and the Olympic Games itself. Our natural and default would have been to go into Europe and to race European athletes as part of the preparation. And we have a final Olympic qualification event that we would want to look at in June. And up until a couple of days ago, you know, we would have looked at a really big international meet in Italy to be able to do that in an outdoor venue that would have been, you know, ideal. And now if Italy appears on those category two nation lists, then we've got to look at, you know, whether that is even possible, and whether we need to rethink our plans. So at the moment, we're back into a little bit of uncharted territory again. But what I can say is that the likes of Sport Ireland and the OFI have been fantastic in negotiating, you know, with the government through the Department of Sport to ensure that athletes are looked after as best as they possibly can without compromising the needs of society as a whole. And you would hope that that happens again.
You mentioned the Olympics, John. I don't know what to make of it myself. I don't know if it should go ahead, because I'm saying, I completely, on the one hand, I completely understand how these athletes don't want to have to wait any longer. They're preparing for an Olympics. It's already been, you know, delayed and all that kind of stuff. But then I'm saying, you know, but they want to give it their best. And given the circumstances where they can't train to the best of their ability, is it really fair that they go into an Olympics not being able to prepare properly for it? You know, should it be postponed for another 12 months? What are your thoughts?
Well, the Olympics is never an even playing field anyway. You know, every nation has different resources and different abilities to prepare simply by the nature of the fact that we're all individual countries. So part of the challenge, and it has been a challenge rather than a problem, is how each country can deal with the circumstances and the cards that they're dealt with and go into a Games with the very best possible preparation that they've been able to do, regardless of what's going on around them. And I don't know that that's any different to regular life, except the new challenge is everybody's got a pandemic on their hands. So, you know, the way that we've looked at this is, if we continue to do everything that we possibly can with the support of key partners like Sport Ireland, Sport Northern Ireland, and the OFI, to be able to do absolutely everything we can for the athletes, we might actually end up in an advantageous situation rather than a disadvantageous situation, because what's happening in other countries is something that we can't control, and nor should we. We can only do the very best that we can for our athletes. And so we've taken a very positive approach to it, which is, okay, we have this in front of us, we'll deal with it, and our athletes will be the best that they possibly can be in that moment that matters.
Well, that sounds like the right type of attitude to have. Dr. John Rudd, it's been a pleasure talking to you this morning. Really enjoyed that. And the very best of luck with the comeback. I'm sure it will all fall into place. And I wish all of your athletes the very, very best, especially in Tokyo.
Thank you, Reggie. A pleasure.
Thanks very much. That's Dr. John Rudd there, director, performance director of swimming and diving in Swim Ireland's national programme. So very good to chat to him and hear how they're dealing with the pandemic and how they're going to come back. Okay, time to turn our attention to horse racing now. Delighted to be joined, as always, by Dave Weldon. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Not too bad, Reg. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I had a very excited little man back in my house last week as he won the 150-1 shot sweep for the Euro in the house last weekend, last
brilliant.
Saturday. So it was
brilliant.
He was delighted with himself as I was telling him what a donkey he had gotten. and he was there. Daddy's still in front. He's still in front. Yeah. Daddy's still winning. So it was great crack. They're the kind of stuff that make grand national dreams, you know, looking at the big outsider coming in and getting the result. It doesn't happen too often. But any chance that we could see anything like that happening today?
Oh, I don't think so, Reg. I'm very, very sweet on the favourite clock cap now. It's very unoriginal and very boring, but he's a 5-1 chance, 11-2 chance. John O'Neill has the record in the race. He's been trained to a minute for this race. He won the Ladbrokes back in November. He came back down, won Kelso after the weights came out. Like, he's officially £14 well in with the handicapper. He jumps from the front. He jumps for fun. He's going to be very hard to beat. But of course, it's Grand National, 40 runners. Anything could happen. I'll give you a few for maybe to put pin stickers for a few quid each way.
Yeah.
Leon Rouge, right down up the top there, 66-1. He's completed over these fences 9 times, which is great consistency. And he'll definitely give you a spin for your money. He's 66-1 for David Pipe. Milan native for Sneezy Foster. Won the Kim Muir last year at Cheltenham 2020, and this has been the target for him since. He's had a wind off the second run after that. He's got a 28-1 shot. And then Annabelle Fly, who's finished 4th and 5th in the last 2 runs of this, has been dropped a fair bit in the weights now this year. down to Marco 155, which gives him a good class angle and a good chance at 25-1. So there's three there, just for the few quick each way, maybe to keep yourself an interest in the race.
Yeah, absolutely, it is a lottery anyway. But cloth cap, you know, how do you go with a favourite in a race like this? Because it's just, it seems you can't. It's just too many 40 runners, all those fences jumping all over each other. Anything can happen. Would there be a lot of money punted on the favourite like that in a race like this?
He's drifted this morning. So what I think has happened, he's probably been back anti-post up till today, and he might drift today. You'll see later on, maybe there might be a bit of money coming in for him. But it's just really, like, Grand National has changed over the years, and it's now a race where it's due to front runners. So we have to be in the first five or six in the field, which will suit this lad. You don't really come from the back anymore because there's so many runners, and because the fences are so, it's not so easy to jump, but they're easier to jump than they were 20 years ago. You can get into a rhythm in front and save a bit. And this lad is proven over the distance. He's finished third in the Scottish Grand National last couple of years ago. That's over 4 miles. It's only an extra 2 furlongs. So he's a lot in his favour. Like, I've pained over this Reg for the last couple of weeks trying to get him beat. And the more I look at it, the more I think he wins. And I think he could go offshore. I think once people start looking at the race itself, and later on today, there might be another plunge on him. He might go off shorter again.
Yeah, another one. I know Ruby Walsh has gone after Burroughs Saint, having a great chance as well at 8-1. So
he's a massive chance. He won the Irish Grand National 2 years ago, the last run of it, which is the traditional route. It's for the Irish. It's the Tiestes in Goran onto the Irish Grand National and then Aintree the following year. He's a massive chance. Patrick Mullins will ride him. He won the top of him yesterday on Live Love Laugh for the same connections and a good performance. So Burrow State would be a great spin round for Paddy.
There is an awful lot of pressure on our shoulders at the moment, but I guarantee you there will be so many people punting on Manila Times because of Rachel Blackmore.
Big time, Red, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be huge, I'd say.
She was 33-1, I'd say, a week ago, and she's now 9-1. She's a good chance as well. I backed her. That was kind of my pick at Christmas time when he ran in the Paddy Power and finished second. Just didn't quite get there, and then he finished second again at the Dublin Racing Festival behind Off You Go, who ran well in the Irish Grand National, finishing sixth. So the form is there. Trained by owned by JP, trained by Henry Bromhead, who can do no wrong, and Rachel Blackmore, of course, can do no wrong either. So that would be a popular winner, all right.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. Okay, where are we going with our lucky 15? Is it all from Aintree?
All from Aintree, yeah. It's okay. The best racing today, so we'll stick with that. And it's just a word of warning, I have a bit of the second-itis going on at the moment. I 4 places yesterday in my own bet, so
okay.
maybe do this each way. So 145, Come On Teddy, 15-2 chance, number 18 on the card. Was third at Cheltenham in the Pretemps Hurdle, and progressive sort this year. And if that race hasn't taken out too much, he should win here. I think he's a great chance of 15-2 for Tom George and Jonathan Burke. Then in the 225, Mai Drogo, number 10 on the card, a 15-8 chance. The Yard are in good form. Harry Skelton's going for the Jockeys Championship. So he's riding out of his skin at the moment. Miss Cheltenham specifically to come to this race. He's the highest rated in the field, and she'll prove himself too good. Bit of caveat to that now. I wasn't expecting, I did horse circle for this race for a long time. I wasn't expecting to see Paddy Adam in the race, who finished second to Appreciated and Supreme at Cheltenham. But he might be over the top after having such a tough season. So I think Mai Drogo, just with that freshness edge to him, might just have the better from him in this race at 15-8.
Okay, Rachel, then in Bally Adam as well. So again, yeah, should attract attention.
Exactly. Hopefully, my lad will drift and I get a better price.
Okay.
In the 3:35, Time Hill. For Philip Hobbs and Tom O'Brien, he's about a 5-2 chance. He finished fourth in the Albert Barrett last year at Cheltenham, and then won his first time out this year, beating Paisley Park. Suffered a reverse against Paisley Park last time at Ascot, and then missed Cheltenham. Paisley Park had to go to Cheltenham. And had a really tough race finishing third there. Time Hill again, but that just freshens out. It's only 3 weeks since Cheltenham, so look for horses who are maybe a bit fresher, just that they haven't had a tough run last time out. So Tyne Hill missed that through injury. And I think all the kind of ground, trip, big field will all suit Tyne Hill. And 5-2, I think he's a cracking chance to get a result down to 3.35. And then finally, in the 5.15, I have to go with Clodcap, the favourite in the Grand National, number 28 in the card. As I said earlier on, he's won 2 out of 3 this year. His form is very strong. He's £14 well in with the handicapper. He's officially now rated 162 when he runs here off 148. And his running style and his jumping style suit this course and distance very well.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Lovely. Okay, that's all of that. Now, I have to give a mention. We're not going to be hearing from you for a little while. The imminent arrival of your new baby is coming. So
Second child on the way next week now, so please God everything goes well, go home and all that, no issues. But my little boy's going to be down for a few months anyway, Rich.
Yeah, well, the very best of luck with that. No doubt it will all go well. Difficult time, I'm sure, with COVID and everything else. You're a bit nervous about the delivery room and all the rest, so you might have to stand outside, will you?
I'll be in the car for a while and then I'll get a phone call, so I'll have to do most of the work on by yourself this time.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it'd be well able, and very best luck with that. And I think you deserve a nice break from the GGs for a while to manage things at home while that's going up.
Cheers, Red. Thanks very much for that.
Okay, Dave, great chatting to you as always. We'll catch up with you again once you've done all of your duties at home and once you're back on track again.
Cheers, Red. All the best. Mind yourself.
All right, take care. That's Dave Weldon there of the Racing Hour podcast, giving us all of his thoughts. As I said, imminent arrival of baby number 2 coming up this week. So we won't have him for a little while, but he's been really excellent to us. There's a huge amount of racing. I'd say the amount of people that will be going after Manila Times because of Rachel Blackmore would be incredible, because she's just been such a run of form recently, and Henry de Bromhead as well, of course, the trainer. So Manila Times, it might be the case, though, as you said, I think it was, 33s there earlier in the week, and now it's gone into 8-1, so that might be a little bit of wishful thinking for some people. There is the Lucky 15, of course, from Dave Weldon, so he's going to go all from entry this week, because it's where the best of the racing is. So the 13.45, so the 1.45, Come On Teddy is the 15-2 shot in that race. Then we're looking at My Drogo in the 2.25, that's a 13-8 shot. And then in the 3.35, we're looking at Time Hill, 9-4 shot. And then on to the 5.15, Cloth Cap, the 11-2 shot and favourite for the Grand National, although I don't think too many people are keen on backing favourites when it comes to the Grand National, because they want to have a bit of an outside chance. Now it's time to turn our attention to rugby. Delighted to be joined by the one and only Will Slattery. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Wonderful day out there. Really crisp, bright, beautiful morning, so you couldn't but be in good form. And the rugby to look forward to later as well, so I am delighted. I'll have to, I have to record the Grand National, I think. It might be over just in time for the rugby to start. Funnily enough, I have a text in, starting with the rugby, we'll get straight into a text in here, just wondering about, is Fardy's selection in the second row for Leinster a case of the old dog for the hard road? And based on how they played last week, did Munster choke against Leinster in the Pro 14 final? Let's take that one first, because I was very impressed with Munster's performance last week against Toulouse. I just felt Toulouse were just slightly the better team, and they just had too much for them on the day. But it wasn't anything like the performance we saw from them against Leinster the week before. So did they choke?
Well, there certainly seems to be some sort of freeze when they face Leinster, both in the coaching box, I think, and on the pitch. I was actually having a conversation with someone yesterday, and you look back at some of these knockout games they've lost and the manner in which they've lost them. And you look back to, say, the great Munster team when they had their hard luck stories. But they always, their big men always delivered in those big games, even when they lost. But you look across these games, and these Leinster fixtures in particular, the Standards, the O'Mahonys, the Murrays, the Earlses, they're very rarely given an 8 or a 9 out of 10 performance. Even Ty Grant, someone who had played unbelievable rugby in the Six Nations, everyone turns around and says, oh, he must have been shattered. But there was a Leinster, Robbie Henshaw had a great Six Nations. He didn't look shattered at all. Mm. And then you see the Toulouse performance and how well they played. and they did cause Toulouse a lot of problems. And it must be maddening to be a Munster fan, to be a Munster player, to see why couldn't we produce just the week before.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one.
The two performances were incomparable, in my opinion. I thought they were brilliant last week against Toulouse, and it could have gone either way. Now, look, Toulouse have a world-class outfit, and they were able to shift through the gears a little bit and get it done when it needed to be done. But Munster's performance was brilliant. And, I mean, I think Toulouse are very much favourites, in my eyes, to win this competition. You know, they're an extremely good team. So that puts the context of how good a performance it was. But it was incomparable to the week before.
Yeah. The two things I think on that. The first one is ball in hand. They were brilliant, especially in the first half. They were moving the point of contact. Damien Dialende, finally, he'd been very good and very solid all year, but he kind of opened his game up, was making breaks, was bringing guys into play.
Yeah.
Ball in hand, they did things we haven't seen from them against a good team. However, to balance the ledger, they conceded 40 points at Thomond Park. Mm. They conceded 4 tries in the second half, which is an astronomical amount to concede. And I think the defeat to Leinster almost masked their defensive problems that day. Like, Leinster could have easily got 30, possibly more than that as well. So that kind of balances the ledger. While I thought they were great ball in hand, they gave up 40 points. Yeah. And like, it could have been the same against Leinster, which is very frustrating from Munster's perspective, because that's actually been one of their strengths. Their defence has been, over the last couple of years, they've been one of the best defensive teams in Europe. Mm-hmm. But the last two weekends, in the two biggest games of their season, it just went to pieces.
Yeah. True. Well, there's a lot to work on down there. But Leinster, on the other hand, have been ticking away nicely. The question about Fardy being picked, it did raise a bit of an eyebrow for me, but I understand it. Like, he's such a quality player and he brings that level of experience into the team.
Yeah, and he brings up a bit of heft as well. Like, interestingly, he was left out of the 23 for the Saracens quarter final, which raised a few eyebrows before the game, and certainly the way it progressed raised even more, the way the front five was dominated at the set piece and an open play by that Saracens team. And with Exeter being so powerful in that area, it's probably at the forefront of Leo Cullen's thinking. He wants Devon Toner maybe as the line-out ball, the banker ball there. The Exeter line-out had problems last week. He might feel that Devon Toner can maybe put pressure on them there. And Fardy adds that bit of heft in the scrum. It does mean, though, that Ryan Baird is being held in reserve. Maybe not a bad thing for in the second half when the game is in the melting pot to bring on someone like that. Mm. I thought Baird had a huge impact in that quarter final against Saracens. He was probably one of the only guys on the day for Leinster who, in the physical stakes, was actually taking to them, was getting over the gain line. He stripped Billy Runapola. I think he could have a big showing in the second half off the bench. Like, for me, like, himself and Johnny Hill are two young second rowers both in action today. Like, Hill has played for England a good bit. He started in the Six Nations. He's getting a lot of airtime. I thought he was very poor in the Six Nations. He was a penalty machine. I'm more excited about Baird's, you know, potential and what he can bring. That could be an interesting battle if they're on the pitch at the same time. But I think Fardy is a good selection for the strengths that Exeter have overall.
Yeah, and speaking of strengths, I don't think there's anybody that knows anything about the game that is underestimating this Exeter team. They are such a quality team, the likes of Gray and Hill, the back row with Vermeulen, you know, across their back line, Slade, Flaherty, Devoto, Simmons, they're all, you know, they can all turn a game in moments. And it's I've watched a lot of the Premier over in England. It's a different style of rugby in the sense compared to the Pro 14. So the Pro 14 can tend to be a little bit of a slogfest, a little bit more upfront battles, and it slows things down a little bit. Whereas in the Premier, it's much more fast flowing style of rugby, much more open. So with the two teams in question, I expect it to be an incredibly an electrifying pace sort of game today. But Exeter they're very, very, very good.
No, they're great. It's funny, I actually don't think it'll be an electrifying kind of fast pace. I think it'll be more of a forward-orientated, you know, arm wrestle. I really do. I know what you mean. Like, both teams, I actually think they're kind of similar in that way. They have really good back lines, but they're both foundations are their packs. They're really strong front fives on their pack. I really think that could be how the game develops. The scrum will be a huge battle, the extra front row. You know, they're close in pick and go game. That's the way they like to play when they get in around the line. I'm picturing it being a very kind of exciting, tight, forward-orientated battle. Now, there's a lot of game breakers there as well, so it could develop that way too. Because, well, you know,
my thought process on that, just so we can have a little debate about it now,
yeah.
Is that those two packs will cancel each other out. So if you're a coach and both coaches are, and sets of coaches are so clever in this area, if you were looking at that, you'd go, right, well, if we get into a slogfest up front and we cancel each other out, the game will just get dragged down and it could be a case of, well, who cracks first up front? Whereas if you were to avoid that and move it more and get it into a high-tempo game, keeping it away from those big, you know, physical forwards and run them around a little bit more, well, you might find that it falls into Leinster's hands a little bit more. So that would be the way that I'd be looking at it from a Leinster point of view. Move that big physical pack of theirs around, tire them out a bit, and try and find some space in the open.
No, yeah, that could well be how it plays out. Like, even the selection, you know, that Exeter have gone with is interesting. Like, they've kept their first choice props in reserve, which, you know, what does that tell us about how they plan on playing the game? Does that mean they want that forward heft, you know, late on in the second half? Are they trying to match Leinster's bench by maybe holding, you know, two of their stronger, you know, forwards back in reserve as well? Yeah, as you say, your players like Stuart Hogg, you know, who, an absolute game breaker. Like, it's interesting when the way you put it. Like, if the two packs kind of match up and it's kind of fairly even there, who has the edge in the back line? I would say Leinster. Like, I think O'Flaherty is a good player, Devoto, Ollie Woodburn, these are good players, but they're not internationals. They're not Robbie Henshaw, they're not, you know, Lammer, they're not James Lowe, Hugo Keenan's in the form of his life. The key man today could be Rory O'Loughlin, actually. He played against Munster, and he didn't convert the chances that he got. He actually got on a lot of ball in advanced areas. There was one or two passes to Jordan Lammer that, if they stuck, that was a five-pointer. If he gets those opportunities today and he misses them, that could be the difference. If all the top players play to their level, it could be a Rory O'Loughlin who comes to the fore. That could be the difference in what looks to be a very, very tight game.
Yeah, well, that's my thinking entirely. I feel that Leinster have the edge in the back line. Sexton needs to run the show as he does, but I think Lowe needs a big game, and he's fantastic. When he plays for Leinster, he gets the ball earlier and he gets time to do something on the ball. That doesn't seem to happen for him in Ireland when he's in the Ireland jersey. Whereas with Leinster, they're able to get him on the ball early, and he's so dangerous. So a big game from him. Henshaw's form is amazing at the moment. O'Loughlin has been playing very, very well. Keenan's on fire. Larmer is electrifying when he gets some space. So when I look at all of that combination together, if I'm Leinster coach, I'm saying I need to get the ball to these guys. It actually reminds me a lot of back in the day when I was playing. We had the likes of Dennis Hickey, Shane Horgan, Brian O'Driscoll, Gordon Darcy, Felipe Contepomi. Golden backline. Our job was get the ball to that backline, let them work their magic.
Yeah, and for me, Lowe is the really interesting guy there. He hasn't played since. I know he was on the bench in the Pro 14 final. Did he come on? I can't even remember if he even got off the bench. I'm not sure if he did. He might have only played a couple of minutes at the end if he did. He has basically been on ice since being pulled from the Ireland team after the disastrous outing against Scotland. As you say, he's been unbelievable for Leinster. He's very rarely had the kind of day for Leinster that he's had for Ireland over the Six Nations. So he will be absolutely, you know, wound up for today's game. Like, after the criticism he's got after the last couple of weeks he's had, I'd expect a huge reaction from him today. Like, one thing I'm interested to see personally is just, this is the biggest game Leinster have played since the Saracens quarterfinal, which in turn was the biggest game they played since losing to Saracens in 2019. So they haven't really been tested. And, you know, if things go against them early doors, will the doubt start to creep in of how the Saracens game went? Because I think this is a very pressurised game for Leinster. Like, they need another European Cup. Pro 14s, they've won four in a row. They walk through the league for the most part. The squad they have, the coaching staff they have, the calibre of player, like, anything other than winning a European Cup for me, for this team, would be an underachievement. So there's pressure on them today. And I'm really interested to see, you know, how the game develops, the ebbs and flows of it, if they can kind of ride through the rough patches the way they didn't do it against Saracens. Like, what stood out to me in that Saracens quarterfinal was how mistake compounded mistake. You had, you know, giving away a penalty, conceding 3 points, Sexton kicking it out in the full, giving away another scrum penalty, another 3 points. Uncharacteristically nervy, kind of jittery. I wonder now, how much would they have learned from that? Because this is such a big test. That's why it's so exciting.
Yeah, no, it is, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's a huge disadvantage as well, not getting a game last week. I know some people think, well, that's great, you're getting an extra rest week, but no, I'm the opposite. I think it's a huge disadvantage because you can be a little bit sluggish, and in a game like this, you can't afford to go behind early.
But even with the guys who say, like, you know, Sexton would have played a lot in the Six Nations. They would have played Scotland, then England, then Munster, like Henshaw the same. There's a couple of key guys who would have been on the road, you know, week in, week out. I don't disagree with you. I think they would have preferred to play Toulon.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's the word. Like, a few of those, like Henshaw, for instance, has been, like, operating at 100 miles an hour since, you know, the start of February.
Yeah.
Maybe no harm for him to get a week off, to focus the mind. You know, I suppose we'll only know when the game kicks off and we'll see how it unfolds. But so you can look at it from a couple of different ways. I would tend to think that some of the players like Sexton and Henshaw might have benefited from it, but I understand what you're coming from.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, just quickly on the other ones, La Rochelle against Sale. I'm expecting a La Rochelle win there.
Yeah, they're certainly favourites. Like, the team sheet they put out is very, very impressive. I think this could be a really good game as well. Like, you have AJ McGinty, the former Blackrock College out half, playing alongside Patrick Clerk.
Yeah.
They're one of the best halfback pairings in the tournament. They have a lot of Springboks, South Africans in that Sale squad. Alex Anderson, the former Saracens assistant coach, has done a good job since he's come in. I think that could be a very interesting one.
Mm.
I think La Rochelle are the favourites. They brought back in Brice Doulan and Gregory Aldred into the starting team, and they have some X-factor players like Lavani Botia, the Fijian flanker, come centre, who can switch in between. It's a great way to start the weekend. I would go with La Rochelle, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was a close one.
Okay, and I'm tipping to lose against Claremont, but Claremont are a quality team.
Yeah, Claremont for me aren't the team they were a couple of years ago. I strongly fancy to lose there. If they could have ironed out some of the kinks from last week, if they can, you know, they have the best player on the pitch in DuPont and the second best player on the pitch in Chesman Colby, and they have the French front rows of Marchand and Bailly who are playing out of their skin. Like you kind of teed it up earlier, I think they're probably the favourites at the moment, and I expect them to win as well.
Yeah, and then the other one, I can't for the life of me work out Racing 92. I don't know what sort of a team they're going to come up with, or performance they're going to come up with. And Begle Bordeaux kind of surprised me a little bit last week as well, I'll be honest with you. I thought they were gone, but they did well to get the result. I can't pick between the two of these because I don't know what Racing going to be like away.
Yeah, like the Porto was probably the most interesting game in a way for me last weekend, because Bristol came in top of the Premiership, a star-studded lineup, and Porto, to be fair to them, they got maybe the rubber of the green with a few decisions, but that was a tough win. And Racing have named their team yesterday. They're missing Simon Zebo, they're missing Teddy Thomas, they're missing Bracatawa, Finn Russell suspended. So they've had a bit of a patchwork team, albeit a patchwork team where you can start Curtly Beale in the centre, Emiliano Buffelli, the Argentine star, full back, Juan Imhoff on the wing, so it's not quite a depleted squad as you might initially think. Mm-hmm. For me, Racing, I thought, were the team this year to maybe get over the line. I thought they should have beaten Exeter in the final. I think they might squeak by Bordeaux, and when they get Finn Russell back, when they get their big guns back, that's kind of one of my tips to maybe go all the way, actually.
Okay, let's turn our attention to the Women's 2021 Six Nations. It's been postponed because of COVID and everything else, and it's now starts this weekend. Unfortunately, it's starting alongside the same time as the European Cup match.
Not ideal.
Which is kind of crazy, but there you go. And I saw as well that the English women's game was pulled yesterday because of the death of Prince Philip, so the televised match was pulled, so that was unfortunate for them as well. Again, it seems like they kind of end up getting the short end of the stick, but however, we won't get into that. We'll move on and say that the way it's been set up this year, there's two pools, so Ireland are in Pool B with the Welsh and French, and then of course England, Italy and Scotland are in the other Pool A, with the winners of each pool facing each other for the title on the 24th of April. So it's a different format this year. Adam Griggs, they've only played his team, his coach of course, they've only played one competitive match in 14 months, so very hard to know what to expect from this Irish team, albeit they're a very talented squad, and it's a very good team that he's picked.
Yeah, like, so as you mentioned there, the format, they play Wales this weekend and they play France next weekend. I think the general consensus seems to be this is a game where Ireland should win, and next weekend would be a game which would be a huge ask for them to win.
Yeah.
Interestingly, as you mentioned, they haven't played in 14 months, but one potential benefit is they've had a lot of training time that they wouldn't usually get. They've had, I think, 20 training camps to bed in ideas, to sharpen their style of play. While nothing replicates match practice in terms of on-field stuff, I was interesting quote from Aoife McDermott, the second row during the week, saying, this is the fittest they've ever been, it's the fastest they've ever been, it's the strongest they've ever been. There's a lot of confident noises coming out of the camp. I saw Louise Galvin,
tipping a 20-point win during the week. And when you have players like Baveen Parsons on the wing, who, for people who might not be familiar, who might watch the game later, Baveen Parsons, an 18-year-old, just finished the Leaving Cert. I think she was capped when she was in fourth year. She is an absolute superstar. She's an absolute handful for defences to contain. Kind of looks like Joan Lomu in his pomp when she's running down the wing. Sometimes she's that difficult to tackle. I'm expecting a good Irish performance from what I've heard from the camp this week and read. I think Wales, I think, were very poor last weekend by all accounts. So it would be great to get off to a good win and then go to France, a tough outing with a bit of confidence under their belt. So, as you say, very unfortunate that it clashes with the biggest game of the weekend. Mm. You'd love if it was earlier in the day so people could actually sit down and watch that game as a great build-up to the Leinster match. But unfortunately, that's not the case. But I think a win, I think, is probably fair to expect. And it'll just be interesting to see if that training time translates to some sort of cohesion, maybe a nice shape and attack, or a few little bits like that.
It always seems a little bit of an unfair competition in many ways, the women's Six Nations, in the sense that you've got the English team with their professional outfit in France as well, compared to what the other nations have. Has COVID levelled it off a little bit this year? I know there was some cuts being made in England from all of that.
Like, I was actually, it's funny, I was talking to a friend about this just before I came on. It's a kind of a crazy setting where England are the professional beast. As you mentioned, there has been changes due to COVID, but, you know, just before, a professional behemoth on a different level preparation-wise to the teams they're facing. It kind of reminds me of, you know, Dublin playing Carlow in the Leinster Champions. I know that's all amateur, but we all know how Dublin sophisticated that setup is.
Yeah.
I don't know how you kind of square that circle. You have one team operating at a completely different level. They have a professional league over in England. I know there's a small number of Irish players there. I know Sinead Cassan, actually, if people have a chance to read it in today's Irish Independent Sports section on the back page, is talking about that very issue, the amateur game in Ireland with the women. What do we do? How do we move it on? How do we go about it? It's an interesting question. I'd be interested to see, as you say, you know, after COVID, what state the game is in. There's a lot of changes happening to the men's game as well. Mm. You know, what's the best way to go about progressing women's rugby in this country? It would be very interesting to see if there's any, you know, movement in that regard.
Yeah, it will be interesting. I think there's a long way to go on that yet, but it certainly will be interesting to see how it goes. But hopefully it'll be a good result today for the Irish women, and hopefully Leinster can get across the line as well. Will, as always, pleasure chatting to you, and we'll catch up again next week.
Thanks, Reggie.
Thanks very much. That's Will Slattery there, of course, of the Left Wing podcast and the Irish Independent, giving us his thoughts on that game. Yeah, as I said, for what it's worth, my thoughts are that Leinster are certainly up against it today. It's a very, very strong Exeter team, but I would stick to my theory that if Leinster can actually move that ball away from the upfront battle and a slogfest against the Exeter pack and use the quality of the backs that they have, which I think, you know, that back line for Leinster at the moment is just quality at the moment. I'd love to see them moving the ball around. Conditions are perfect for that type of game. Move things around, open it up a bit, and use that flair to try and run the bigger Exeter forwards around a bit and tire them out. And as the game goes on, that could well be a good tactic to go with. But that's easy to say sitting here looking out the window and dreaming about playing rugby. It's a lot harder when you have to implement it. Okay, that's it from rugby for this week. But of course, we have got the Masters going on at the moment, and I'm delighted to be joined now on the line by Rémy Byrnes, pro course up in Lachine Springs, to give me his thoughts on how things are going. Morning, Rémy. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you this morning?
I'm doing very well, thanks. Very well indeed. Really enjoying the Masters, I suppose, because of the situation that we're in. We can kind of sit back and enjoy it a little bit more and watch it in peace. And the featured groups have been very interesting all along. Disappointing for Rory, but never really seemed to be thereabouts of it anyway. And Shane's not going too bad.
Yeah, Rory's unfortunately is having a bad time at the moment. He just has to regroup and try to find his game a little bit. Shane, I think, is coming good at the right time. I think he played well a few weeks ago with the TPC. Mm-hmm. I think he's confident. Yesterday he seemed a little bit peeved off in the middle of his round, but he held on tremendously well in the back nine and had three birdies. And I liked his attitude on 18 as well, throwing the divot at his caddy and stuff, a little bit of you know, showing a little bit of flair. And the birding the last, I think, is it's instrumental, I think, for his weekend coming up the next 2 days, because he's really playing well tee to green for the first time in a long time in Augusta, you know.
He doesn't seem to let things get to him, you know. I mean, he'll have a couple of bogeys and he'll sort of know he could have done better, but he seems to just...
Yesterday was a really hard start, man. He started 6-6, like a shocking start, and he held his nerve. He was on the cut line. He would have known that, and that mental approach and the mental toughness, and he fought really, really well throughout the last, especially the last 10-11 holes, made a couple of nice par saves, played really well 10-11, hit a great shot into 12, and made a couple of birdies, especially the one in 18. So he'll begin out today with a lot of confidence and trying to get a fast start in the third round, because as we all know, it is moving day.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully he can do that. He's done well to get there, so hopefully he will do that. Now, another person I was impressed with yesterday, because the wheels started to come off a little bit, but he pulled it back together, was Justin Rose, 7-under, leading for the first 2 days. And it started to look a bit rattly there yesterday, but he got back together well.
Yeah, Justin, as we know, has been sort of out of form for the last year and a half, and he went back to, he played early in the season in Saudi Arabia and Dubai and places like that, and he's gained a little bit of momentum, a little bit of confidence, went back to his golf coach, Sean Foley, and that was a great testament to his character yesterday, because I think he went back to 3-over, he was 4-over par for early on in his round. He held his nerve, and I think Shane and himself sort of bruised off one another a little bit, and Louis, and he came back really well. And as we all know, he's beaten the playoff in the Masters before. He's a great tee ball. He's a great iron player. And, you know, Justin Rose, the type of player, when he's up there, he normally stays there. He's won some big tournaments around the world, U.S. Open champion. And he's getting to that age as well where he wants to try and the Ryder Cup as well is in his head. So a little bit of extra pressures there. But I think Rosie can certainly handle the pressure, and hopefully we'll see him up there over the weekend.
Yeah, I was a big admirer of him. He seems a very, very good pro. The other one that's kind of, you know, was the ultimate superstar for a while and then fell off a cliff a bit, but is right back there and is steadily, you know, under the radar, moving up along there, is Spieth, of course, 5-under now. Really chasing down that lead.
Probably golf's toughest competitor. I mean, he has been in the fray, though, way early on the season. He's played a lot of golf. He had a chance in Los Angeles. He had a chance in... He shot that 61 around in Arizona earlier on the year, and then eventually he got the win last week, even though the field may not have been up to where normally fields are in the PGA Tour, but still got him with a lot of confidence. He's playing really well, and he's one dogged player, man. He doesn't let anything go. He holds his nerve around the golf course, and he's one guy that's smiling, he's laughing, he knows how bad things have been the last few years, and he just seems to be mushrooming in back into where he was back in 2017. So you can rest assured that Jordan Spieth will definitely be up there over the next couple of days.
The other final one, then, just to mention, is Ken's, one of Ken's favourites, Popeye, as he calls him, DeChambeau. He's put himself right back. I think he did 5-under yesterday or something like that.
I mean, he shot 67 yesterday. Tremendous back nine. Yeah. Phenomenal competitor as well. Really good competitor. Won the Arnold Palmer against Westwood there in the last hole. Started to putt very well yesterday. Held his nerve well. Got back into the fray. Won over, line 17th. I mean, he'll need another couple of quite low rounds, but I don't know how the golf course will play. Yeah. It seems to be the Masters committee can change the course to more or less whatever score they want. They can suburb the greens, or they can cut the fairways the other way around, not allow any bounce in the ball. But certainly, look, he's a hit-and-miss golfer, but normally when he starts playing well, he normally stays there. But my pick, Reggie, I think, is this Justin Thomas. He's really, really playing well. He's got a lot of bottle, so much steel. Unfortunately, yesterday he three-putted the 18th green, but that's one golfer that the rest of these guys are going to have to watch out over the weekend.
Absolutely. Well, Remy, I know you're up in Lachine Springs there. You must be praying like the rest of us that the end of the month will see us getting out and hitting a few balls ourselves.
Yeah, well, look, it's unfortunate government circumstances with all this lockdown, etc. But I certainly miss the members and certainly there's a lot of older people out there that haven't left the house, and normally golf is quite a safe sport. So hopefully now on the 26th of April, we'll get all the mad golfers out. We've been watching so much golf, so hopefully we'll be able to get to play a bit of golf. There hasn't been a golf ball lost in Ireland over the last 3 or 4 months, so we certainly need to. And we need to get you up there as well, Reg. It's about time you bought a couple of dozen balls off me as well.
A golf ball lost or a club thrown into a lake. Between that now and losing balls and firing clubs away, you're a very good customer in me, Ramey. No question.
Yeah, exactly, Reggie. Yeah.
All right, bud. Great to talk to you. We'll catch you
soon. No problem. Thanks a lot, Reggie. Bye-bye now.
Take care. That's Ramey Burns there of Lachine Springs giving us his thoughts on the Masters. Time to turn our attention to that sport, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Bernard Flynn. Good morning, Bernard. How are you?
Great, Reggie. Good to talk to you. How are
great
you keeping?
Great to chat to you, bud. I haven't spoken to you for so long. It's terribly missed you. It's been great to have you back on the airways. How's everything going with you? Your manager, of course, of the under-20s now, Bernard. That's flying for you.
Well, listen, it's flying remotely like every other manager, and we are sticking to the rules, Reggie, I promise you.
Yes,
I have been tempted, I don't mind telling you, but for me, the reward isn't worth the risk, and they're a great bunch, to put a big effort in. Okay, we're behind the curve a little bit, we started late, but listen, I'm enjoying something different, and the reason, Reggie, I'd done it was, to be honest, I looked in the mirror a few times and I felt a little bit, you know, not so good, about not maybe giving a bit back over the few years. I was doing a good bit of media work. Mm. So the personal circumstances didn't sort of allow it. So I'm doing it, and I'm doing it for the right reasons, and they're a great bunch, and I'm going to give everything I can to try and improve them.
Yeah, well, I texted you at the time. I thought it was a brilliant appointment by the Meath County Board, and I think you have an awful lot to give. So, Meath is a very proud county in football. I grew up watching the likes of yourself and watching them battle against the Dubs and various other teams, and, you know, good, hard, quality football, the type of stuff I love. So there's experience there that needs to be tapped into. So I was delighted to see you involved and getting involved and bringing your piece to it all. But you're a bit disappointed, though, with what feels like a little bit of, you're saying, isolation to the plan in the way they've planned the fixtures.
Yeah, no, I done a piece with Colm Keyes yesterday, and I felt very strongly, not just me, Reggie, it's leave out winning a game or anything like that. I think, and unless you work and deal on a day-to-day or weekly basis with these young guys, like, it is probably the most vulnerable age group, what they've missed out in, you know, leaving certs last year, this year, the first 2 years last year and this year in college, they've literally had none. So they're impacted. The 17, 18, 19-year-olds have been impacted hugely. Mm. And I honestly, known privately and other 20 managers, there's a lot of little sort of incidents going on and things that everyone's trying to help. You know, some of them are struggling with it. They're lucky to be playing football and elite athletes, but it is a vulnerable age group, and I just felt so strong that the GA should know this, they should have known it, and just even involve them and include them and even acknowledge or even say to them that this is going ahead at some stage, don't worry. Because if you switch the light off, Reggie, on young lads like that, What's the point? Why are they doing what they're doing? They need a why, they need a reason, they need a dream, and great young lads and young girls around the country, but they do need to be included, and I felt they were isolated on their own.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I look at my own kids not being able to go to their football and their basketball and everything else that they go, and they're lost without it. They're absolutely lost without it. And then you go to the older age group again that you're involved with, and it's such, like, people think, oh, they're grown up once they're going to get. They're not. That's still the developmental stage. You're learning so much at that stage, and you need to be around people, and you need to have something to look forward to, and it's such a vulnerable thing. But I suppose, Bernard, the other thing then is, we don't help ourselves in the GAA when things happen like at a level where it shouldn't happen, and they bring the spotlight on it for the wrong reasons.
Well, Reggie, the GAA have done huge work since the start of the COVID, and they had a massive job in their hands with their announcement of the fixtures the other day. I actually know that. I respect it. Yeah. I know what they're trying to do, and the job is not easy. I thought they did a lot of good work. I like the way they set out the fixtures. We've league football back on the 15th, 16th of May. The All-Ireland Championship is going to be finished at the end of August. Club starts then, you know, August, September, October. So I think that was all good and positive. But what I just cannot understand is, and this is the real crux of it, and this is where the real problem is going to come in every county, even the Young Dubs. you know, Loud, Carlow, Kilkenny, young lads were allowed, and it was announced, they're allowed to go back. A 16, 17-year-old can go back in pods of 15 in their clubs, supervised, and his mate or his fellow club member or his friend next door up the road at 18, 19 cannot go back on the field on the 26th of April the same day. That makes absolutely no sense. Yeah. And that was my biggest point.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I couldn't agree with you more because so much of it doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, equally you could argue that kids who are sitting in a classroom all day long can't go and play a bit of football together outdoors where it's been proven that it's safe. 0.01% transmission rate in the outside area, and they can sit in a classroom all day long on top of each other and they can't go out and play a bit of football. The logic doesn't come into this.
It doesn't come into it. And, you know, outside supervised, in a park here, there must have been 15, 20 young lads in a big park hopping off each other here the other day. Parents delighted. It's happened everywhere.
Yeah.
And in a controlled, supervised environment, and the one thing the GAA have got right, they've been brilliant on the controlled training and the COVID adherence aspect of it. They've been superb.
Yeah.
So 10 lads, 15 lads, properly supervised. It was me with the under-20s. I would make sure it's done right. If you could only train 15 one night, 15 the next night, why could they not have allowed and looked after a group that they should know and should have known are struggling a little bit?
Yeah.
And that is the biggest worry. If they either if they know this and don't care, it's a worry. But if they don't actually know what's going on with the young people, that's even more so.
I tell you, Bernard, it's not isolated to GA. It's every sport. I've watched the football club, the local soccer club that my kids are in, the lengths that they went to when they were allowed to open up, like to disinfecting balls, and lads having to bring their own gear with them and no mixing them. And it was policed so brilliantly. You were only allowed inside the gate at certain times. And every club across the country was doing that. And they really were, in football, in basketball, in rugby, all across the board. And then, you know, there's no logic to this. The clubs have been, in every sport, in my opinion, have been exemplary in all of this. I think, you know, it's hard to just pick out an age group, but I understand what you're saying. I do get what you're saying. But across the board, it should really just be opened up.
But you know what, Rob, Reggie, at the end of the day, no matter what, you know, we keep working with the young lads, and I'm sure every manager, at this age, it's about developing these young lads. And it's psychologically, it's sport, it's academically. Any way you can help them, we're doing that. That won't stop. I know other managers are brilliant in the same role as well. So, listen, we are where we are. You know, we love the GA. They had an easy job, but they got this one wrong, and so wrong, without including them. They didn't have to exclude them.
Just to finish, your Laoch Ragaill piece is coming out next week on TG Cahir. It's honouring heroes of the game, and no doubt you fall into that. You'll be humble about it, but you must have enjoyed doing the piece anyway.
Well, Reggie, honestly, I tell you the truth, you must have been stuck in this series a little bit, but I looked at Breed Corkery and Owen Lark, and I think they might have about 30 All-Irelands between them. And I said the other night to myself, I think I'm a little bit of an imposter here. But listen, I was asked to do it. I was a bit surprised. I think there's even a Mead, there's a lot more worthy than me. Genuinely, I mean that. But I decided, and it's different, Reggie. I'll tell you, the way they do a brilliant, brilliant show. But you do it over a different period and you're talking about lots of different things and they put together. I was uncomfortable with myself. I'll talk about anybody else or help them. When it comes to your own life and private life, and I suppose the good, the bad and the ugly is in there, Reggie. You know, there's a bit about, you know, the ups and downs of life and business and things, and I've had a good view of them. So it's all in there. You know, it's, I suppose, a little bit different. And I was just, the family were a little bit afraid what the hell is going to be in it. So it's watchable, I suppose it's watchable.
It'll be very watchable. I'm very much looking forward to it. It's on the 15th of April at 9:30 on TG Cahir. So I'm really looking forward to that. Bernard, as always, great pleasure chatting to you. I hope everything goes well with the under-20s and you can get back to it fairly soon and you get a decent squad together and you run well.
Thanks, Reggie. Fair play and keep up the great work there, guys. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Okay, bye-bye. That's Bernard Flynn there, of course, former Mead legend, giving us his thoughts on the under-20s for Mead and the getting back to play there. Time for football now. The one and only Alan Cawley joins me on the line. Morning, Al.
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
Great, thanks, bud. It's a beautiful day and loads of wonderful sport this weekend to look forward to. Thanks be to God. And there was wonderful sport again last night, and Pat's getting a wonderful win against Derry.
Yeah, Pats are flying, Reggie. They've had a brilliant start to the season. Picked up another victory last night, and that's 10 points out of 12 now. So, as you say, it's a brilliant start for them. I watched them last week against Bowes. I was impressed with them. They followed on that form again, obviously beating Derry last night. Derry did have a man sent off, but Pats were comfortable winners, really, overall. And Stephen O'Donnell's team have really hit the ground running this season. And it's good to see as well, because St. Pat's are a big club and you want them up challenging, up towards the top end of the table. So it's good to see.
You wouldn't have predicted the league table to look the way it does at the moment at the start of the season. No doubt about that.
No, definitely not, Reggie. There's been certainly a few surprise results, and I suppose two of the teams that we thought would push Shamrock Rovers all the way was Dundalk and Bohemians, and of course they met last night, but as you say, they met after being down the bottom end of the table, and we wouldn't have expected that at all at the start. So it was a big game before last night's match in Oriel Park, and Bohemians came out on top, obviously, with a 1-0 win. So there's major question marks going on at the moment with Dundalk. They've only picked up 1 point out of 12. There's a lot of uncertainty around the management, and this phrase we hear, management committee, and it's a bit of a shambles, really, to be honest with you, Reggie. And it's been reflected on the pitch with the performances as well, because they're nowhere near good enough, especially with the squad that they have. The resources, the money that they're spending on the squad as well, and to pick up 1 point out of 12, it's a really poor return. But to be fair to Bowes, it's a really good result for them. And they had a disappointing start up until last night, and that win may just kickstart their season.
Yeah, you're looking at Derry City and Dundalk propping up the bottom of the table with Waterford just above them. And then at the other end, you have Pats, Sligo in second, and Finn Harps and Longford third and fourth, and Rovers down in fifth, Drogheda in sixth, Bowes in seventh. You know, I know there's an awful long way to go, but it's baffling to see that kind of a lineup.
Yeah, there's surprise teams there, as Yusuf and Harps in particular have got off to a great start. Longford, who has just come up and drawn, have picked up points as well, so they're all up kind of near the top to the middle end. Sligo Rovers have had a brilliant start, but there's a huge game in Sligo tonight, Reggie, and I'm actually down here far at Shamrock Rovers against Sligo Rovers,
yeah.
And it'll be a real test for Sligo Rovers just to see exactly where they're at or how far they've come, because there was a lot of optimism before the start of the season, and to be fair, they've backed that up with the results so far, but it's a huge test tonight going against the champions, the best team in the league. Even though there's a few surprise results there, Shamrock Rovers are still the team to beat. They've only played two matches, they've picked up 4 points, so I'm really looking forward to the game. It's at 6 o'clock this evening. It should be a cracker.
Any excuse for you to get away, huh?
the mother's cooking, the master's golf, and get to watch Sligo Rovers and Shamrock Rovers, Reggie. I tell you what, I'm living the dream this weekend, I am.
You sure can't beat it. Longford, well, you know, given what I've just said to you, they'll feel pretty confident about taking on Drogheda tonight.
Yeah, they will, because they've had a good start themselves. And funny, I met their manager during the week just out for a walk, and he was delighted with the start that they've had, because it's a big jump from the First Division up to the Premier Division, but they have picked up 4 points. They got beat last week, but he was delighted with the start that they've made, really. And as you say, it's an opportunity for them tonight against a fellow team that got promoted also in Drogheda, albeit Drogheda were the First Division champions, and I think Drogheda have a better team, and they've had a good start themselves. And Tim Clancy and Kevin Doherty have done a really good job up there, and they've carried that into the Premier Division as well. So I think that'll be a decent enough game. It's an opportunity for both teams, because both of them will fancy their chances against each other. And these are the games that'll define both of the club season. The team playing against the teams that are going to be down around the table. Anything they pick up against the top teams is a bonus, really. But it's the games against the teams that are going to be down around you that are going to define the season.
And then Finn Harps, of course, they're at home to Waterford, so they'll feel, given their standing and Waterford's poor run of form so far, there's a real chance for them to push even further up that table.
Definitely, yeah. But if you were speaking to their manager, Ollie Horgan, he'd say the complete opposite, Reggie. He plays down their chances at every opportunity. But they're at home to Waterford. As you said, they've had a brilliant start to the season, 7 points out of nine. I fancy them to beat Waterford as well. In fairness to Waterford, they got a good win up in Derry last week, but as you said at the start of the chat, look where Derry are on the table. They've had 3 defeats and they're really struggling, so I'm not sure how much stock you can put on that. But it was still a win away in the Brandywell, but I do think Finn Harps will get the victory against Waterford tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's League of Ireland stuff. We'll move across the water then. There's plenty happening. But I suppose the pick of the weekend will be that Spurs United game tomorrow at 4:30.
Should be a great one, Reggie. Yeah, you would hope, but Spurs have been so indifferent with Mourinho, and obviously him going back to Man United. But I've said this a few times on the show, I think Mourinho's best days are behind him, Reggie, and there doesn't seem to be all well in that camp with the players. I'm not sure if they responded to some of the stuff. You listened to his comments after the match last week as well, and he was talking about the profile of the players that he's used to, would have seen that match out, and the mentality. And I'm sure if you're a player in that dressing room listening to that, he's indirectly having a go at somebody, and they probably know themselves who they are, or if it's two or three people, but it still won't sit well amongst the group. And I think the biggest thing for me with Spurs this year, and you look at Man United obviously in the game tomorrow, it's where Harry Kane is going to go at the end of the season, Reggie, and will Spurs hang on to him? Because he must be thinking at this stage, if he wants to win trophies or win things, he needs to get out now with Spurs. Yeah. I think the Spurs kind of trailblazing in terms of under Pochettino, where it looked like they were going to maybe win a trophy or do something, I think they've regressed really. And if he's looking at the squad at the moment, the way things are, and how well he's playing both with club and country, he has to be thinking now seriously of maybe making that move and going to possibly City or United or wherever, where he may have a better chance of winning a trophy.
Absolutely, I couldn't blame him for that, because that's ultimately what footballers and all sportsmen want to do. They want to win, you know.
And he's such a brilliant player, like, yes. You know, he's a phenomenal player. He really is. He's one of my favorite players. I love to watch him. He's absolutely brilliant. And it must be a serious kind of question he's asked. I know he loves Spurs and all that kind of stuff. That does count for a lot, and they've been good to him. But he's been more than good to them in return. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But in terms of the game tomorrow, I think United picked up a good result during the week against Granada. Should see them into the semi-finals of the Europa League. They should finish second in the Premier Division, even though we've said numerous times about Solskjaer, and I still don't think he's the man to maybe overtake a Man City or the giants of Europe. But at the end of this season, if they finish second and they were to win the Europa League, you would have to say it's progress. But whether they'll go any further in terms of them going on to win a league, I don't know. Unless they sign the likes of Kane, I think United should be breaking the bank now for Kane or Haaland or whoever, and really kind of nail down the final piece of that jigsaw.
Yeah, absolutely. A big one as well for Liverpool. They did a job on my team last week, but they really need to beat Villa. But Villa are only 5 points behind them, so Villa are playing quality football at the moment as well. But if they can find a win and maybe the others slip up a little bit, they can push back towards that top four. Massive game for Liverpool.
Yeah, it is. But I can't say it, Reggie, because they're just so indifferent and so inconsistent. Like, as you said, they had a good win against Arsenal last week. Again, how much stock would you put on that? Because Arsenal, I think, are in disarray as well. Yeah. But I thought Liverpool was a good performance, and you're thinking they'll go into Europe now. And I fancied them against Real Madrid. They were dreadful during the week, Reggie. They were really poor. The two centre-halves, Phillips and Kabak, they won't cut it at that level. And it's just been such an indifferent season for Liverpool. We all know the reasons and the injuries, and it's been tough on them. But to see the performance they put in during the week against Real... Now, I thought Real Madrid were good, to be fair to them, but I thought Liverpool were absolutely dreadful on the night. And it's a big game again, as you say, but whether they can get back into the top four, I don't know. I know they're only, is it 3 points off it? And on the table, it looks like they obviously have a good chance, but I still think it'll be between Chelsea and West Ham to finish that last place in the top four.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot to go on that. It's going to be a difficult one for them, all right. Who have you got on the show this week?
We're going to speak to Jim Beglin, Reggie, and I don't know if people got a chance to listen to the one, but we had a huge reaction to this week's podcast. It was probably the biggest reaction we had, but it was just around the chats we've been having over the last couple of weeks over the development of Irish football and where we're going and all the usual kind of conversations that we have. But we had Harry McEwen, the FEI employee, and Alan Caffrey on, and it was a really, really good chat. So if anyone hasn't listened to it, check it out. But there was a huge reaction to it, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Really looking forward to seeing Jim Beglin on this week.
And Jim is a great fella, yeah, so looking forward to chatting to Jim.
Oh, no doubt about it. Who do you fancy for the Masters?
I backed Justin Rose. Oh, would you believe that, Reggie?
You would.
Justin Rose.
You're the cute one, that's for sure. No doubt about it. He's looking good.
But they're ganging up behind him, Reggie. I'm looking at the list.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. There's a few hot chasers there, all right.
He's like a sitting duck. I don't know, would you prefer to be out in the lead like that, or would you prefer to be at the pack
Sunday
or whatever?
All right. We'll catch you again next week.
Thanks a million.
Thanks
bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Unfortunately, that's all time we have this week on the show on Dublin's Talking Sport. Thanks to our producer, Blaine O'Hara. And I'd like to also thank all of our guests who joined us today. We'll be back again next week. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.